Dropping the Hammer with Dan McFadden, presented by the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. I'm Dan McFadden. Ring-a-ding-ding for the dinger. A.J. Allmendinger is a winner again in the NASCAR Cup Series as he won Sunday's Bank of America Roval 400 at Charlotte Motor Speedway. And with me to talk about it is Jared Haas. Jared, how are you doing this fine Tuesday?
I'm doing all right. Ringing the humdinger for this weekend. A.J. Allmendinger made a statement with his uncertainty in his future, but I am doing well. A little bit of car troubles. That's why we are a little bit different format this week.
Yeah. So, yeah, also we'll be a little bit time constrained due to Zoom's limits, unfortunately. So we're going to get this through this as quickly as we can. But, yeah, as A.J. Allmendinger, Colleague Racing, they dominated the final stage of Sunday's race, with A.J. Allmendinger getting his third NASCAR Cup win and his second with Colleagues Racing. And I didn't realize this, Jared, until earlier when I was reading through the post-race transcript. This was Colleague Racing's first win as a full-time Cup team. Because their win with AJ 2 years ago at Indianapolis, they weren't yet full time. So that I completely took that for granted. So some of the emotions behind this win kind of went over my head, mostly because also I was in the grandstands in Charlotte on Sunday. So I wasn't privy to, I guess, some of the storylines that were being talked about Sunday. So I guess just from your perspective, from watching at home and on TV, what was the emotions like post-race for you, seeing it for the team, the most for the team anyway?
I mean, Allmendinger is a very much of a raw person. He's a person that's going to have his emotions on his sleeve. We've seen it throughout his career, even from like the beginning times when he was trying to qualify in time, sick to his stomach, you know, jubal celebration to his wins, even right here, considering the fact that we don't know where Allmendinger is at the recording of this podcast. Is he going back down to the Xfinity Series, going to the Cup Series? Jordan Bianchi said that it's likely he's going back down to the Xfinity Series due to budget constraints for that team. So I think it's a really, a solidifying win to A.J. Allmendinger, a confidence booster to say, hey, I actually belong here. You want to go trophy hunting, you better go trophy hunting with me because I'm going to get the trophy for you. It was a really raw post-race for A.J. Allmendinger.
And it also took me off guard when he ran up into the grandstands. He pulled a Blaney. So is that going to be like the new like Charlotte tradition? If you win at Charlotte, now you have to like go up into the stands.
I mean, there's people that copy traditions. You know, Daniel Hemric kind of has the backflip that he kind of took for Carl Edwards. I think there's been a few other drivers that have climbed the fence besides Tony Stewart. So there's other ways to celebrate the Polish victory lap, but hey, some people have their own style, and A.J. Allmendinger decided in that moment to be to celebrate with the fans. So I think that's a definitely unique moment. Those fans right there are probably not going to forget when A.J. Allmendinger ran up into the stands with them.
As I said, you know, Allmendinger dominated that final stage. He led 46 laps. He's now the first driver in the playoffs this year to lead the most laps and win. But even though he himself is not in the playoffs, he had to hold off some charges from Kyle Busch and William Byron. William Byron, who's now finished first, second, and second in the playoffs, he's on a roll.
He's becoming more of where did he come from? Because all of a sudden I'm looking up, I'm like, William Byron's in the top five. William Byron is contending for this race. Really shows that the 24 team is clicking right now, that they're building the strongest under car for William Byron. But it seemed like his competition on the other flip side, Martin Truex Jr., where have you been, bud?
I know.
You've been out for lunch and dinner and all night long because Truex, I don't think, has finished in the top 16 in this round. But get this, he's in the round of eight.
I know. Well, thank you, playoff points. I feel like that's probably the only reason he's advanced, right? Is those 15?
Oh, yeah. He's been by the skin of its teeth. If he didn't have those playoff points, he would have not been there. But that's been the story of the tale. In order for you to advance to the round of eight, it's those playoff points. I made mention of this a few weeks ago when Joey Logano was eliminated. Joey Logano in those three races between his championship season and this season was only a position difference between average finish. But what was the big detail that caused him to miss it? It was those playoff points. I think this year he only had 8, and it was between – he had over 20 last season. That gets you over the hump. Even if you have a terrible 6-race stretch that Martin Truex Jr. did, he can forget about it and win out here in Las Vegas and then win the race at Phoenix, and he's a champion. And I'd say some people would argue so that he'd be a deserving champion what he did in the regular season. But right now what we're focusing on is the playoffs.
I mean, well, look back to last year. Joey Logano did next to nothing almost all season. And then he's the guy who wins the championship. Half the battle is getting to the playoffs, and then hopefully you flip the switch in the playoffs. And that's what Logano did, and Truex could do that. He's good at Las Vegas. Won Homestead once, when he had to win to get the championship with Furniture Row. And he's good at short tracks.
How Logano got himself locked in, was winning at Las Vegas last year. So he was able to advance the championship before. Didn't have to worry about the drama of Martinsville. That's how Denny Hamlin missed it. And, I wouldn't argue that 2022 was Joey Logano's season, but he played the circumstances right and hoisted the trophy.
I love how you sum up Ross Chastain's wall ride as the drama of Martinsville. That's the only reason Denny Hamlin missed it. That's the only reason. So
it's the sense that this is the reason why that Denny Hamlin didn't make it, but Joey Logano didn't have to worry about that at all. The Hail Melon, as they say.
Yeah. So we're now done with the round of 12. We move on the round of 8. So we can now say so long, farewell to Kyle Busch, Bubba Wallace, Brad Keselowski, and Ross Chastain. Ross Chastain, who's basically been missing in action since he won at Nashville. Brad Keselowski, he, if not for being in a wreck at Talladega, he would have been in a much better position to possibly advance, but nope, didn't. He was involved in a couple of accidents in the race, and he had
a couple of stop-and-go penalties for stopping on the track.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
That makes a big difference, and the driver that you're competing for won the pole, won stage one, and finished sixth. That's pretty hard to beat.
Yeah. And you had Kyle Busch, who tried to throw a Hail Mary. They stayed out of the pits during one stage break, and then – was it a stage break, or was it during a caution, just a normal caution?
It was during one of those cautions because he didn't win a stage.
Yeah, okay. He stayed out of the pits for strategy's sake. And it almost paid off. I was kind of shocked that after staying out, like the only guy who stayed out at one point, he basically only lost one position. And it came down to him going up against William Byron and then, AJ Allmendinger. But he wound up being like 30 points out when it was all said and done. Tires weren't a lot Sunday at the Roval, if that proved anything. Or Kyle Busch is just really good. Could be both.
The tires played some effect. It wasn't like as important, but it just, this is why I didn't like the stage cautions being added here, right? The strategy was just, very in line. Like, this is what's going on. We had Tyler Reddick and Chase Elliott were at a disadvantage for winning the stage. Tyler Reddick didn't pit for the first stage, and I think he restarted back in the mid-20s. And that was looked at a disadvantage. Now, Daniel, you tell me what other sport, maybe besides in the most MLB recent, what happened in the postseason with the MLB having the bye for the best MLB player teams, that it's a disadvantage to win something.
Yeah, you're right. I hate, I'm not a strategy person like at all. I'm horrible at keeping track of it, especially when it comes to pit stops. I'm like, I don't know who's on what strategy. I'm terrible at it. Just ask someone else. The 18, they tried and they almost did it. Are you surprised that Busch maybe wasn't a little bit more aggressive when he was racing with Allmendinger in order to keep the lead? Because I thought maybe he'll use some fenders, but no, they never did. It was some clean racing between the two of them, which AJ Allmendinger noted in his press conference. Like he knows that Kyle Busch will race pretty clean. So were you surprised that there wasn't some more aggressive racing there at the end?
I don't think so. This is a wiser Kyle Busch. You know, if this was a Kyle Busch of 10, 15 years ago, maybe so, this would be a possibility. But I think Kyle Busch understood the situation that he's going on, that, you know, Allmendinger had better set of tires. He had the better car at the end of the race. Kyle Busch was trying to drive to survive. So no, not really that Kyle Busch was going to try to Hail Mary this move and try to punt AJ Allmendinger to win that type of race. I don't think it would have set well with him, but yeah, I mean, it's just a tough break that it's the stuff that happened beforehand, especially like at Talladega, that really put him behind.
So, and then that leaves us with Bubba Wallace, who after making it this far with no playoff points was finally eliminated. He did manage to get stage points in both stages of this race, which I thought was impressive. Nine points finishing second in the first one, and I believe four in the second stage.
He finished seventh in that second stage.
So four. So it was overall a good day for Bubba until he got spun by. Okay, so this is where I'm at a disadvantage for Sunday's race. So I'm sitting in, and I want to compare notes. So me and my dad went to this race, and we sat in a Grand National Tower, which is right there at the entrance to Oval Turn 1. They have the big Jumbotron back on the backstretch. It doesn't really help. Like, for the entire race, I couldn't – none of us could, like, make out the running orders that were displaying on the screen. We couldn't, when they would show the playoff standings, couldn't make that out either. Replays were kind of hard to watch. So when Wallace had his incident on the backstretch going to the chicane, I just now today skimmed through the highlights on YouTube, which, and the accident wasn't included. And so I had to look through NBC's Twitter feed to find a replay of the accident. So I just now today found out that it was Suarez who got turned down into Cindric, who got turned into Wallace, causing that wreck, which sent Wallace spinning into the chicane, and he had to, you know, stop on the front stretch later. So I didn't know any 50% of that until today. But it was an unfortunate accident for Wallace, and he's now out of the playoffs. So, Jared, it was hard for me watching this race because, one, I forgot my scanner at home, so I couldn't listen to radio chatter or the radio broadcast. Had no horrible cell signal, so I couldn't update Twitter or anything to find out what was going on. And so I'm having to go off my eyes and ears at the track, the PA system, which you can only hear when the field's like on the other side of the track early in a run. And so I was at a real disadvantage for most of this race. So I'm curious. I thought after the first stage, which was pretty boring, the race ramped up, and it was actually pretty exciting, pretty tense, especially when everyone's trying to chase down Allmendinger at the end. So from your perspective, was this a good race? Was it entertaining from your perspective?
It was kind of it's weird how it feels so focused in with TV, right? Because when you're at the Roval, you could have very expanded view and see what's going on, what's happening. But like TV feels very closed in, like you're looking at that one driver. So, you know, obviously, I think take tips and advice on Daniel's misfortune. Make sure to buy, you know, rent or use a scanner. Gets a sense of one, it's freer ear protection, but also gives you access to what's going on and what's being said on the radio. But it felt calmer than most Roval races, but it felt a little bit more amped up than the other road courses. I'm thinking of Indian Watkins Glen, but it wasn't like, oh man, I'm going to remember this win for a while. I think people are going to more remember what happened with AJ Allmendinger.
Yeah, I mean, it was a popular win up in the stands. People were happy for him. They were clapping. They were cheering. So that was not lost on me. Also, you know how it's sometimes people comment that it seems like TV will turn up the crowd mics whenever Chase Elliott takes a lead?
Yeah. That's, you could barely hear that at all.
No, they were cheering. it's not fake. They were going crazy when Chase Elliott took the lead. So maybe TV does turn up the mics a little bit, but everyone around me was pretty happy that when Chase Elliott took the lead. So that's not entirely manufactured. So one thing that stood out to me was did they ever mention on TV when Kevin Harvick had his incident with, I think, Truex in the backstretch chicane?
I don't think so. Was that the final lap?
No. It was early in the race.
I don't think so, if I recall. I mean, that seemed like a lot of the stuff that was going on was more or less not really shown. It was tough to get those little nuanced battles that happened there.
You know, it was early in the race, and going into chicane, like Truex and Harvick had some sort of contact that caused Harvick to miss the chicane, and then Harvick had to pit for it.
Yeah.
My dad noticed it barely somehow. I never did, and it took like four or five laps until the track, you know, video board showed it. So, we never got clear context on what happened there. So I was curious, and you never saw it on TV. So that's very interesting.
Not really. I mean, it's weird how, in the sense that, right, this is a track that's an oval and you can see a lot of it, but you can still miss quite a bit of this race.
Yeah. So this is the first time I've ever attended a road course race. I've covered them at Indianapolis and there at the Roval multiple years. So it was a very different experience because it is a road course. It's like one of the only road courses where you could see a good chunk of the track from wherever you're sitting. But TV still missed stuff, which is that's bad. That they need to clean that up. So, but anyway, yeah, I was in Charlotte for vacation, my final vacation of the year. It was a NASCAR pilgrimage with my dad. Got there Friday night, left Monday. Have you ever been to Charlotte outside of the parameters of covering a race, Jared?
No, I was there this spring, and that was my first time, and I was there.
So did you get to do anything like outside the track?
I did visit some shops while my flight was delayed.
Where'd you go?
KBM.
RFK. Okay. Yeah, I went to RFK. Too is my second time there. This time I got to take a picture of the Jeff Burton car that won the 1987 Texas race, which was the first race at that track, and it was also my first Cup race, NASCAR race at all. So now I have a picture with the car that started it all, sort of, for me. But it was a really, really fun few days. Me and my dad on Monday, we actually got to go. We went up to Stuart, Virginia, to see Wood Brothers Racing's museum. First time up there. It is a way out there, Jared. Like it is a trek. It's 2 hours. It's about 20 minutes from Martinsville, all back roads. It's like a half hour of back roads to get to Stuart, Virginia. And there's not a lot in Stuart, Virginia. There's the Wood Brothers Racing Museum. There's a South Virginia Racing Hall of Fame, which is on just behind the museum. And there's a Subway and a Hardee's and a few local restaurants that aren't open on Mondays. So that is what Stuart, Virginia is like. If anyone ever wants to go there, it's worth it to go to the museum. You see a lot of history, a lot of old Wood Brothers cars, a lot of trophies. And you might just run into Leonard Wood, 89-year-old Leonard Wood, who was there yesterday when me and my dad went. And me and my dad actually got to watch him like working in his garage on something. So that was cool. 89 years old, Leonard Wood is still tinkering around in the Wood Brothers garage. They have a custom lawnmower there. And it's supposed to be like, I think, I think it's a hands-free lawnmower that Leonard Wood designed and built himself, and it's on display there right next to, you know, a bunch of race cars, and on it says this custom-made lawnmower was built and designed and built by Leonard Wood. It has yet to cut a single blade of grass, but that is beside the point. It's just a really cool looking contraption that's designed to do something that's never done. And it was done by Leonard Wood, and that's why it's cool. I had a fun few days in Charlotte. That's the wrap up on my NASCAR pilgrimage. So yeah, let's get to the news. Okay, Jared, the 2024 schedule officially came out last week. It was underwhelming, at least in my opinion. I think the opinions of a lot of other people, especially after how it got hyped up by President Steve Phelps last year, saying it was going to be the most aggressive schedule when it came to variety. And that's not really how it turned out. You get the Daytona 500 as the first race, and then we're going to Atlanta for the second race. So you get two super speedway races right off the bat. And then, to end the year, Daytona is no longer the final race of the regular season. That's now the Southern 500 at Darlington. Daytona's not the week before. And in the playoffs, Atlanta starts the playoffs. So we now have two super speedways in the playoffs. Watkins Glen has also been added to the playoffs. So now we have Watkins Glen and the Roval. And outside of us going to Iowa Speedway for the first time in the Cup Series in the summer, that's really it. I was disappointed.
A lot of head scratching.
What?
A lot of head scratching. Considering first Atlanta, the justification of going to Atlanta in February when the average temperature is like 8 degrees cooler in March. It's not a good. I understand that to make a little less of a West Coast swing, but it's still way too cold down there in Atlanta, Georgia. Because, people, they go down there in March and they're wearing coats and hats. Now, that's probably going to be arguably one of the colder races. I think some of them, Atlanta, going to playoff race. You're just leaving chance for the first round a lot more into people's hands. I was okay with Watkins Glen going in there, kind of giving some redemption to what happened in 2020. Daytona. I don't like Daytona as a season finale. I'm not like a huge fan of it. I know some people were frustrated with it because you're just leaving all this stuff in the chance, right? If you want the best 16 drivers in the playoffs, arguably, I think Darlington is a good testament to this track. You can't just have somebody try to throw a Hail Mary at the last second to make it in the playoffs, have someone like Austin Dillon throw it in there what he did last year. So, do I want my last race to be a race that's up to chance, people working with me, or do I want a last race to prove that somebody, this is the top 16 drivers? I would argue in more in that line that this kind of more toes the line of, hey, this makes, I like the added bonus of Labor Day. That's good that it's there as well, keep it a tradition, but I think this helps the little less a chance of like, oh, we're going to throw it in the last race and we're going to have some, some random winner could get in here. I also like Indianapolis going back to the Oval in July. I think that's the important part. Ratings were getting hampered when Indianapolis was going up into preseason football. I'm hoping this gets back up with this.
Yeah. It is possible for someone at Darlington to do a Hail Mary. Kyle Larson tried that on Denny Hamlin a few years ago.
But it wasn't like, someone in the back of the pack that was doing Hail Mary.
Yeah, but I thought Daytona was.
You have to get in that position to make a move like that.
Yeah, I know. You have to be basically running up front all day to do that. But no, I liked having Daytona as that last race. It was just some nice chance for someone who to get in there and have a shot at the playoffs. And
they can have that shot at Talladega in the spring, the Daytona 500, or whatever heck they move the second Daytona race, whether back to July 4th, the 25th week, they have that opportunity.
All right. But that like we're going back to Chicago. Thankfully that gets to have a chance in the spotlight, hopefully without rain. This time we're going to Phoenix for the championship race. Why would we, do we keep having to go to Phoenix? Especially when the short track package isn't, that great right now, with this car. It needs to, I know warm weather locations that are track locations, they're owned by NASCAR rather than Speedway Motorsports, are few that late in the year. I get that. And we're not going, we can't go back to Auto Club Speedway right now. So that leaves basically Homestead.
Just be thankful it's not at like Atlanta or going back to Daytona to decide the championship.
No, I would keel over and no, I couldn't. No.
See, be thankful for that, but it's like that brings up your proponent of like, what other tracks do we have that we can go? You know, maybe Las Vegas. If you're going to do Las Vegas, probably make the argument to go back to Homestead.
Las Vegas is a Speedway Motorsports track, so yeah. NASCAR would never end its season at the Speedway Motorsports track. They want that championship money.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the part of it. They want that championship money. They want a place where they've got their, you know, they've got all the tourism coming in, and I think they see the growth in population of Phoenix, Arizona, and that the potential that if this is a big event, we could grab some fans in the Southwest.
All right, so that's the 2004 schedule. What else? Oh yeah, very briefly, it was announced today that Matt Kenseth has been hired as a competition advisor for Legacy Motor Club. When the email dropped, I had to read the headline more closely before I fully reacted, because I thought, oh, Kenseth is coming out of retirement again. So he'll be working as a mentor to Eric Jones and John Honeycutt, which I find ironic that Kenseth will now be mentoring the driver who basically forced him out of his ride at Joker's Racing in Eric Jones. I thought that was funny. What about you, Jared?
Legacy Motor Club is trying to align the pieces into a little bit more successful 2024 season. Arguably, I think they just want to forget 2023 existed. With their team, I think they're hopeful that Toyota goes over. That's a little bit more helpful. Kenseth was spotted this past weekend at Charlotte. I think getting the feel of it, and I think Matt Weaver took picture of that. Kenseth and SRX CEO Dong Hawk was there. But I think, you know, could be interesting to bring Kenseth in there to development of, you know, they understand Toyota.
Yeah.
The TRD pipeline, you know, it's not like a bad move right there. I think this could be a good move. Potentially open up some doors. I don't think this is going to be earth shattering, but you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Kenseth gets mentioned in an interview or two when, you know, down the line, Legacy Motor Club builds up.
All right. So moving on from that to our race preview for the South Point 400 at Las Vegas Motors.
Now we're fixed. Okay, now we can go through and preview Las Vegas.
By the way, I brought some stuff back for you from my trip, so it's on your desk. So
thank you.
So when do you think your car is gonna be like ready to go?
I gotta get the parts first.
Perfect.
I gotta get the tool. Sorry. Sarah, her husband was going to lend me some tools, but I have not heard back yet.
She's out today for some reason. So
today and tomorrow, well, she's been covering with everything else.
So, all right. So let's get this started. All right. So where did I do it? All right, Jared, it's time for the South Point 400 Las Vegas Motor Speedway, which will air at 1:30 p.m. Central on NBC and will start the round of eight for the playoffs. And in that round of eight, we have guys like Ryan Blaney, Danny Hamlin, Martin Truex Jr., Tyler Reddick, William Byron, Kyle Larson, and Christopher Bell, and Chris Buescher. Chris Buescher, putting an RFK Racing driver in the round of eight for the first time since 2014, which was the first year of the elimination format. So it has been a while. And Mr. William Byron, he's the defending winner, at this track anyway. He won in the spring. He won in an overtime restart after he had to fend off Truex, Kyle Larson, Alex Bowman. I had to refresh my memory on that race earlier today. But Byron dominated that race. Kyle Larson also led a bunch of laps in that race. Playoff drivers who finished in the top 10 of that race were Byron, Larson, Bell, and Truex. So this round sets up well for both Hendrick Motorsports and Toyotas, because Toyotas are good at intermediate tracks, and Martin Truex Jr. and Denny Hamlin are really good at all the tracks in this round. So who do you think's got the advantage? The Hendrick boys or the Toyota boys?
Well, I mean, I'm William Byron. Are you playing a hot hand? Or are you playing a hot hand with William Byron? Yeah. He won there in the spring, and in the fall, last fall, he finished 13th. But I mean, William Byron, Denny Hamlin, Kyle Larson, I think besides Martin Truex Jr., who's been struggling of late, you know, he's got to be finishing in the top 10, at least to advance in this round. But I think arguably those three other drivers that are in right now, Byron, Larson, and Hamlin, are going to be really hard to unseat after these couple races. Remember, Larson won at Homestead last year as well. And then Martinsville was Christopher Bell's walk-off. But I wouldn't be surprised if somebody else sneaks in there, taking Truex's spot. But I think this is Hendrick takes it back with William Byron and Kyle Larson doing well, and as well as Denny Hamlin. But I think those three drivers that are in right now, really hard to unseat them.
And you have Homestead, where Kyle Larson whipped everyone last year, in a year where intermediate tracks put on great racing. That was the one track where someone stuck up the show in the next gen car. Thank you, Kyle Larson. I think that race will be a battle between Larson and Reddick. Just going to see who can do the most with the wall, running the wall. It'll be like that. That's the real Super Bowl race right there. See who comes out on top of there and advances to the championship four. And then you have Martinsville. Like I said, Denny Hamlin's good there. Martin Truex Jr. is good there. William Byron won there last year. I don't think that pretty much. Oh, Bell won there last fall, but we all forget that because
that was his second of two walk-off wins.
Yeah, yeah, it was. But yeah, we forget that because of Ross Chastain's Hail Melon. So, all right. First, who wins this weekend at Las Vegas?
I'm going to ride the hot hand of William Byron. And he's done first, second. I think he comes back to first.
Okay. I'm going to take Tyler Reddick. I think he's won there in the Xfinity series, and like we talked about, Toyotas are really good at intermediate tracks. They're very fast, as they showed off at Kansas just in the first round where Reddick won. So I think they're gonna keep rolling with that. Okay, so who makes the championship four? Who's gonna be going for it in Phoenix?
Byron, Hamlin, Larson. Those three drivers. And as I mentioned, Martin Truex is the one that's going to be the short stick. But I think now the consistency in Chris Buescher gets him in.
All right. So I'm also picking Buescher to get in there. I'm taking Buescher, Reddick, Hamlin, Byron. So I don't think Larson's consistent enough. Even
you think Larson's gonna miss?
Yeah, he's. I mean, he could go out and win Homestead, and because you don't need to be consistent, you just have to win once.
No, you just need to win one race. Yes, so. I mean, but still, the spread between first place William Byron and last place Ryan Blaney is 30 points. No, excuse me, I am mistaken here. That is wrong. The spread is actually less than that. That is actually 27 points between first and last in the playoffs. And I mean, the cut line, Larson's only +3 and above Chris Buescher. So a lot of things can happen.
And Ryan Blaney, he was having a good day at Homestead last year. And then he had that problem exiting the pits that screwed him over, if I remember right.
He had problems at Las Vegas as well, too.
You did? Okay, I was there. What happened? I forgot. I was there. I don't remember what his problem was. So.
I think it was coming off of pit road as well. I think he had 2 weeks in a row. I think that Blaney had issues coming off at Homestead. I think that at Las Vegas, he actually, let's see here. He actually did cause a caution on lap 229 coming off of turn two. So Blaney has had some issues at these tracks last year. So he's hoping to put that behind him. But I think it's Buescher's going to sneak in, and the three of the four that are already in the top four are going to be advancing.
All right, we'll see how that plays out over the course of the next 3 weeks. But again, you can watch the South Point 400 at Las Vegas Motor Speedway at Las Vegas Motor Speedway at 1:30 p.m. Central Time on NBC Sunday. I'm Dan McFadden. Thank you for joining us this week again on Dropping the Hammer with Dan McFadden. You can follow me on Twitter at Dan McFadden, and you can email me at dmcfadden@adgnewsroom.com. Jared, where can they reach you?
They can find me on the app called X, formerly known as Twitter, at Real Jared Haas.
All right, and we will be back here next week to talk about all things Las Vegas. Thank you, and have a great week.